Hello and welcome to the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We will, as always, start with a story.
I used to hate speaking in front of groups. My very first experience of that was when I was 13 years old at school. I remember standing in front of my class, 30 kids, all looking at me as I had to give a presentation to my class, and I hated it. I went completely white. I was shaking. I can still remember it now. The walk of shame at the end when it was done. It was only 2 minutes, but I really couldn't stand it. I thought, I want to do everything I can to avoid doing that in future. But of course, you can't avoid it. And there were a few times when I had to do it at school, give presentations at school. And even for work, that's kind of one of the things that was expected of me, but I did everything I could to avoid it, which of course hurt my career and my confidence. That all changed about 20 years ago, a bit less. I went on a workshop by Remco Claassen, who's quite well known in the Netherlands as a presentation skills guru, really. And suddenly I realized that there were a few simple techniques which even me as a techie, even I could use. And so I started applying them, and my presentation slowly got better and better and better until people actually at my work even quite wanted to attend them. They were like, hey, Mark's giving a presentation. I thought, wow, that's amazing. But I looked around and I saw that my colleagues were kind of still doing the same old thing, reading their slides to groups. And I thought, this is crazy. And I remember one day I thought I should be able to explain this to them. So I had an idea. How could I explain this to my colleagues? So I decided to organize an evening at TMC together, that's my employer, together with my wife, who's a natural at presenting. And I just gave the Martin Luther King speech, but in the standard work format. So I just read it from slides out to the group. You know, I have a dream. And people thought that was a great way of explaining just how you can kill a message in the standard PowerPoint way. Now, to cut a long story short, I decided to do that again at the customer site I was at, which is ASML. And that was very well received. So I approached internal communication and they said, hey, we can make a video of this. So they did, they put it on YouTube. And then one of my friends saw it and he said, hey, that looks like a TED talk. So I just Googled TEDx Eindhoven, pitched to them, and a couple months later, literally, I was on the stage on the famous red dot giving this presentation. And then my colleague said, hey, Mark, can you explain how you can present? So I started giving workshops, and that's been going now for a number of years. It's been really, really taking off. I have given workshops to, I guess, 800 people. I've coached even senior management now, and last year I wrote a book all about how to speak, and it's particularly appropriate for anyone who wants to communicate to non-experts in their topic. So I also coach TEDx speakers, other TEDx speakers as well. How can you bring your message across in a way that people say, hey, I want to listen to that? So that's a bit about what I do and why I do it, because I believe so much that all of us have a message inside us, and we have that so much potential. And if we can't share that, what a waste that is if we keep it all to ourselves. That's what I did. I didn't dare to share it. But if we can, that's amazing to be able to share that message. So that's why I do it.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing your message, Mark, and for sharing your story. We will talk a lot more about your story in a few minutes, and we'll also find out more about what you do, how you do it, and how it helps people. But before we do any of that, let's have a quick introduction to the podcast.
You're listening to Storytelling with Puck, the podcast designed to show the power of stories in life and in business. Stories connect us on a deeper level, which is why we'll be sharing, chatting about, and feeling the impact they have on every one of us. Your host, Stefano, is the founder of Puck Creations, and we work with your business to define a clear, consistent, relevant brand which stands out from the crowd. We use that brand to create content that makes your audience think, feel, and take action. Visit puckcreations.com to find out more.
Before you do that, I know a man worth knowing, a man called Mark, sadly not Boeing, but rhymes aside, this man will entertain, he'll educate, and when you go away, he'll make sure you're inspired to take action. Mark Robinson, give us all a fraction of who you are.
Very nice.
Thank you. This is about you. Sorry, go ahead. Let our listeners know a little bit more about you. You've given us a great introduction with your story already. Yeah. But so who are you?
Yeah, so the mystery is revealed. My name is Mark Robinson, and I live in the Netherlands with my Dutch wife near Eindhoven. And by day, I'm a techie. I work for TMC and currently at ASML, that's my customer site. And I love that work. And I say by night, kind of like Batman, but it's not really, it's often during the day as well. I also give workshops on how to speak in front of groups, particularly how to get your message across, that message that's inside you, how to bring that across in a way that people actually want to listen to your message.
You did that very well at the beginning. You put your message across. Some people might think that even though you kind of explained the difficulties you had when you were a kid, but they might still think, well, he sounds like it's natural. I don't think I could sound as natural as that. So right. A couple of questions. The first one is, how much of a natural are you? And the second one is, and you mentioned two of these words, I think, in your initial story, the three C's. What are they, and why is it important that people improve their presentation skills?
Ah, great questions. I can tell you've been reading my book. So,
indeed, so let's it's start a very good book.
Thank you. I start with the first question. I am totally not a natural, and that's also... I mean, I said I was shaking and went completely white. That is totally true. I used to hate speaking in front of a group. It's got a lot better, especially since I've been giving workshops in it. I've actually become a lot more confident. Yesterday, I was at a local university, Delft, speaking in front of 100 people, and I felt pretty relaxed the whole time, which is totally different. But that's come from years of practice, and particularly, as I said, learning the techniques. And that's really what makes is what partly why I can do this successfully. It's not because I'm a natural, because if I'm a natural, I wouldn't know how it works. It's because I'm totally unnatural and had to learn all the tricks and techniques. And so I can explain that also to others, particularly my fellow technical people. All right, the answer to your second question, what are the three C's? Well, these are the three C's of why it's not only important, but essential to learn how to speak in front of a group. And the three C's are, it's great, first of all, for your confidence, because if you can speak in front of a large group, then in a one-on-one, you're just so much more confident because it's much easier. It's also great for your career, because if you can speak in front of a group, on, you'll be seen as the expert on that topic. If you speak well on it, people will want to come and hear. And it's also good for what I call your charisma or your influence. Because if you, as a leader, can explain your vision in a way that captures people's imagination, their attention, and inspires them, as the word you used earlier, inspires them to action, then that only will increase your influence, your charisma. So those are the three C's, your confidence, your career, and your charisma.
So going back on the charisma side of it and digging a bit deeper and linking that to what we were talking about earlier with the fact that you weren't a natural at the beginning and you had to learn, yeah. You had to understand and put all of the pieces together to how this works. You seem extremely charismatic. I imagine our audience listening will think that now. It's interesting though, when you see people on TV or you watch people in front of a crowd, often you will think, wow, that person has so much charisma. They must have, you know, had a life of being brought up that way, or it must come naturally to them. But I imagine if you heard someone say that person has no charisma, would you insert the word currently?
Absolutely. I've spoken to, well, let's, Before I answer that, let me take you back to an example, one that you have heard of, Martin Luther King. Is he a charismatic person?
Seemingly so.
Right, indeed. Well, it's very interesting you say that, because when he gave his famous I Have a Dream speech, he actually made a complete mess of it at the start. So when he was speaking, he decided he would make a whole new speech, and it failed. And one of his singers behind him called out, "Tell them about the dream, Martin." And this was a speech that he had given hundreds of times. So he had iterated it, made it better and better and better. So on that famous day in Washington, D.C., he went back to the speech that he knew well and delivered it, and, of course, changed the world. So did he have charisma? I'm sure he did. I'm sure he was a naturally charismatic person, like, for example, President Obama, super charismatic speaker. However, I think that he had to develop it and learn and become better. I mean, I use President Obama as an example. He has a very famous speech you can watch on YouTube called Fired Up, Ready to Go. And there are two versions of it, one in 2008 when he was campaigning to become president, and one in 2016 when he was campaigning for Hillary Clinton. And between those two, 8 years difference, you can see that he has been probably received extra training, because even his body language has improved, even though the story is pretty much the same. So it's just incredible. Anyone can improve. Now, going back to your question, I see that also on my workshops. People who come in and they can almost hardly say a word, and yet by the end of one day, they are so much more confident. I mean, everybody improves without exception. They might start as an 8 already, and then they could become a 9 or a 9.5. They might start as a 1 and they leave as a 6 or a 6.5. But everybody improves dramatically, and everybody can develop their charisma. Wherever you start from, you could always increase.
So if you were watching somebody present, if you were watching somebody even have a conversation, you know, go around a networking group, how would you define whether or not they're charismatic? You were giving scores, and I know that's more of a part of the thing that you're doing for training. You probably wouldn't score people individually normally, but
no.
But how would you define, oh, that person's charismatic, or that person is less charismatic? What would be the parameters for you?
Yeah, I think the only really objective metric you can use is, do people want to listen? How many people want to listen? You know, and you know that there are people who, I mean, you know, there are people when they present, you think, oh, here we go, I'm going to switch off. You know, they start reading out their slides. It's like death by PowerPoint, you know, their famous expression. And there are other people who they just walk on stage. They may use a flip chart. They may use nothing, but they just start speaking and they just grab your attention from the first few words. So I think it's something that everyone can recognize. And the only objective way I know to measure it is, yeah, do people want to listen?
I think that makes a lot of sense. So how charismatic is Adolf Hitler was?
Oh, he was incredibly charismatic. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I must say, I say that only because of what I've heard. I've never seen one of his speeches or seen him present. I haven't studied his body language. But clearly, if you can convince a noble modern nation to do something so evil, you must be charismatic in a very, very dark way.
Yes, I've discussed this with other guests in the past.
Yeah.
The two sides, I mean, this is something I said, I'm sure I stole it from somewhere accidentally, but the two sides of the same coin are persuasion and manipulation. And I think if you can get people to listen, you can persuade them and you can manipulate them. And charisma has a lot to do with how much influence you have. The reason I mentioned Adolf Hitler, though, I should make it clear I'm not a fan, was...
I thought I was thinking that escalated quickly.
It did. Was actually because of, I'm going to throw the blame all the way back to you, was because of something I read in your book. And I was interested to know what it is you would do to make Adolf Hitler less charismatic. There's the philosophical question.
Yeah, but then if you could go back, you know the answer.
I do, but not everyone else does.
No. So the answer is, you give him PowerPoint, and that would totally destroy his message, and no one would be interested anymore in the third right. They would say, "Forget this. We're off. Going to do something else." Yeah. But going back to what you're saying about manipulation and influence, what's the difference? Well, influence, of course, is, yeah, okay, you are charismatic, people will like to follow what you do, but it becomes manipulation when you're serving your own interests. Mm-hmm. So although I also teach on my workshop, there are many, many ways you can influence and even persuade just by word choices, for example. But yeah, it's all about, are you doing it for the benefit of your company, the benefit of the world, the benefit of your audience, or are you just doing it self-serving? And yeah, that makes all the difference, of course.
That's right. I completely agree with you on that. And talking of persuasion and influence and manipulation and stopping manipulation by giving Hitler PowerPoint.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? What is it about PowerPoint that would stop Adolf Hitler being such a good orator? And maybe we should stop talking about Hitler, but let's talk about anybody in a presentation situation.
Yeah.
Why does PowerPoint stop people from presenting well to your mind?
So the phrase I use is PowerPoint is like a crutch, and yet we were born to run. And what I mean by a crutch is that people will use it and like lean on it way too much. It takes over their communication. So what they do is they don't make eye contact, they turn around and look at their slides, even read them.
Right.
Whereas we are made to communicate, so we make eye contact. This is one of the things I do also with online workshops. I say to people, make sure you make great eye contact with your audience. Make sure the camera is at eye level, which it isn't for us right now, but usually it's on boxes, the camera's at eye level. And yeah, I even have tricks to increase, you might have seen on my LinkedIn page, is a trick to increase the camera size. So I always make sure I have good eye contact online or offline. So PowerPoint, I say, is a crutch. As I said, we were born to run. We were born to make human contact. And of course, in the corona years, we've all suffered from that. And now we're coming back to the office. We are making much more contact and much more influence with each other in a positive way.
So if we decided to put PowerPoint into a ring, into a gladiatorial ring, and put it up in a fight against a smartphone, who would win?
easy. The smartphone is far smaller, but it would thrash PowerPoint in no time. Absolutely. And that's the problem, right? I was just saying, well, I mentioned that at the start that I was at a university yesterday, and a similar question came up. And I said, you know, a few years ago when I was growing up, we had programs and they would have commercial breaks every 20 minutes, advert breaks. And so we had to have kind of a 20 minute attention span minimum. Then along came YouTube, and the average video, I guess, is what, 4 minutes or so. And so our attention span could drop. And now we are in the TikTok generation, and 30 seconds, if you haven't got people's attention in 30 seconds, you're dead. And that's why it's so important to learn how to keep people's attention.
Tell me more about that.
How to keep people's attention. Yes, well, that's exactly the topic of my TEDx talk, how to present to keep your audience's attention. But really, how do you do that? Well, I'm using one of those tricks now, aren't I? And you will recognize this, don't you, Stefano, what I'm doing now? And probably your audience
indeed
might, wouldn't they, if they had read my book? So what is it? Of course, I'm using asking lots of questions. That's one simple way to keep people listening. And the other simple way is how we started our conversation, which is with stories. Now, why are questions and stories so powerful? And the answer is they both create mystery. So when you hear a question, you want to hear the answer. When you hear the start of a story, you want to hear the end of the story. And for both of those, that mystery is what keeps people listening, thinking, hey, I want to solve this, I want to find the answer, I want to hear to the end. So those are two very easy ways of keeping people's attention. But of course, there are many more simple ways. If you're good with jokes, you can use jokes. Otherwise, you use visuals in your slides. You have body language. There are many, many ways to keep people listening. One simple way, which I also did yesterday, I was standing on a large stage. See, I'm telling a story now, so it comes naturally. Standing on a large stage behind a podium, I said, what's one easy way to increase your audience's attention? And I just walked away from the podium. I said, look, you just walk away and people's attention span goes up because they think, where's he off to now? And then I walked off the stage. And I started walking towards the audience. And I said, now everyone's listening, right? Because you think, oh, please don't come near me. Please don't talk to me, because then all the attention is on that person. So just walking away off the stage is a great way to get people listening.
It seems to me to often just be about doing something that's a little bit different.
Absolutely.
So as you said, there's the mystery element, there's the element of surprise, the element of fear that people have when you're walking towards them. Now, all of this, I think, relates to, and you mentioned stories and the power of stories because of the mystery. But I also think it comes back to something we often talk about on this podcast and as a business as well, is the power of emotion and how you connect with people, not just logically, but emotionally. Mm. I could go on about this forever, so I'm going to shut up. Why don't you tell me your thoughts on that?
All right. Well, what I do say to people when I'm talking about creating a goal from your presentation, one part of your goal is, how do you want people to feel as a result of your presentation?
Right.
And I say, well, most presentations leave us in one of three states. I'm either bored and I write a great big B. And I say, I'm either asleep or write a great big A on the flip over. Or I'm often left dead and I write a big B and then I say, BAD, you've got to learn to stop giving bad presentations. Now, how do you want people to feel ideally? And I ask the audience that, and they say things like, excited, curious, inspired. I say, right. You want people to feel, for example, inspired or curious. Now, how do you do that? And the best way is tell an inspiring story. So here's how I encountered this problem. Here's how I solved it. So you can now do the same, just by explaining. Or, you know, if you're in a business presentation, you might feel a bit awkward telling a story. So you can just say, let me give you an example. And you just go into that, you tell a real life story. It doesn't have to go long. 30 seconds is often more than sufficient. Give a real life example, and people will remember that for a very long time, much longer than they'll remember your dull slides full of text, if you still choose to do that after this interview.
Some people will, I feel, until they go to one of your workshops, but we'll see. You mentioned a few different emotions there. And one of the emotions that you mentioned in your book, and I think it's really important to talk about this because I think people avoid this sometimes, is anger. Why would you want to make people feel angry?
I thought you were going to say that. I thought, gosh, we're back to Nazis again, but hopefully not.
You can, yeah. Other people cause anger as well. It doesn't have to be him.
So here's one example where you might want to cause your audience to become angry, but angry in a positive way, not in an uncontrolled way. Because what I mean by anger is not a random rage thing, but rather a very directed, like, intense form of inspiration. That's what I mean. So, for example, let's say that you are a quality manager, your products are terrible and customers are complaining, maybe even customers are being injured by it. That would be one way. Say, okay, listen, this is not acceptable, and let them become a bit angry, kind of at their own either lack of ownership or lack of poor quality. And then they're like, okay, now how are we going to solve it? You know, so then you direct it to your, what we call the call to action. So that's one example. It might even be, let's say that you're, well, let's say right now that you are representing a Ukrainian cause. You might say, listen, it's just not right that these people are having to leave their homes and travel across the world, and they come here with almost nothing. How can we solve that? And get people a bit, you know, emotionally connected to your message, and then they're much more likely to want to contribute to help, because then they can understand it. So go back to what you said earlier, that's what I would not call manipulation. That's positive persuasion, positive influence, because it has a noble cause.
I completely agree with you on that. And you really touched, I think, something important there, in that I think people often think of emotions as either something overly happy, which again can be great and can be useful, the excited emotions, the inspirational ideas of emotion, or they think of really sad, and they think of emotion almost in the negative term of, I don't want to be emotional, people.
Yeah.
People see me being emotional. God, no, I couldn't do that. Yeah. but sometimes forget that there were billions of emotions. I may be exaggerating slightly, but there were loads of different emotional states, and they can all have uses. They can all have a place if we use them properly. And when we are persuading or manipulating, again, people do use it for the wrong reasons, but for the purpose of what we're trying to explain here, when we are persuading, as long as you are steering in the emotion that you're hoping people will feel in the right direction, then actually it's a good thing to talk about stories that might potentially make people a bit sad, make people angry, make people a little bit fearful, if it's done in the right way and it's measured. Yeah. That's my opinion on it. I think you explained something similar, but...
Yeah, I think also we need to put this in a cultural context. We're both British, we're both males. You can probably count the number of emotions we have on one hand. I start with hungry, and after that, that's probably the only one that comes to mind.
Once you eat, a couple more come to mind, possibly happy. And then full.
That's right. So we're not blessed with a wide spectrum of emotion. But having said that, I think the key here is, what do you want to achieve with that emotion? And again, as you say, it's very easy to go to manipulation, which we don't want. But you know, if you're persuading, you may want people to experience what your audience experiences. For example, what your target, what related to your goal. A great example of that is Bill Gates. After he left Microsoft, he did a TED talk because he wanted to invest his billions to combat malaria. But how do you communicate that message to a rich Western, American audience, where he said, malaria, of course, is transmitted by mosquitoes, and I've got some here. And he had a jar, and he opened the lid of the jar and said, we'll just let them roam around the auditorium for a while. And then he said a line which got me completely. This is the emotional line. He said, there's no reason only poor people should have the experience. And bang, the problem was there in the room. How powerful is that? And then he said, by the way, these are not infected. But fortunately, but you know, that message that brings that emotional side in a positive way that can influence positive change. Yeah,
that's really powerful. I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's worth watching. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I'll definitely have to take a look at that one. That's that kind of blows you away, and it takes me to something else, but I'm not going to go there just yet. But we're just going to drop it, which is it's all about the star.
Good. Yes, the star moment. That's what
the star moment. But we'll save that for now. We'll save that for now. instead,
you're not going to want to miss that. There we are. That's an expression to keep people listening. You're not going to want to miss the star moment. Yeah,
you do it as well. It's like you've done it before. instead. I need to know something different. It's really important. So, in fact, what I need to know, in fact, is what do you, in fact, know about, in fact, blackbirds, in fact?
Oh, gosh. Well, now you're going back to the story I started with, which is with my hippie teacher, poor guy, who has now become infamous, as I wrote about in my book.
In fact, it's time for a small interruption to remind you that you're listening to the entertaining, informative and empowering Mark Robinson on the Storytelling with Puck podcast. We've had our share of Hitler, played around with the Three C's and removed the slides from presenting. You'll be missing the, as we talk about the Three E's, discover where you can find Mark and help you to find your storytelling confidence. Talking of confident storytellers, here's one of the best, Andrew
Ford. We're all in the persuasion business, whether that's pitching to a potential client, selling ourselves in a job interview, or convincing a teenager to tidy their room. How we frame our message and how we deliver it makes all the difference. And this is the theme of my podcast, Leaning Forward. I'm Andrew Thorpe. I'm a speaker, a trainer, and a storyteller. And I'd love you to tune in to our latest episode.
So, yeah, this poor guy, he used the word in fact in almost every sentence. And he was a balding guy, but also a hippie. So he kind of had straggly long hair, but like a really bald patch at the, which I mean I can't brag about either, but he had and looking back, I should have realized this guy was not an expert on presentation. Now I know all this, but of course as a young kid you don't know that. So it was in my English class, and I wanted everyone to give a presentation. He said, okay, who wants to go first? So I put my hand up. I thought, well, let's get this over and done with. I went up the front with my poster of the Blackbird aircraft. That's what the Blackbird's about. And that's the one I was shaking and fearful. I'm not even sure why, but it's kind of like that fear you can get. I sometimes see these people on my workshops, these in the morning at the start, because they experience that fear as well. And they can barely make eye contact. They can barely speak. And sometimes they just read it out aloud. Yeah, that's where that comes from. Just on that topic, though, I want to tell you another story, if I may, because
please.
A few years ago, there was, I gave a workshop at a local university, and there was one person who came on the workshop, and she read her whole presentation.
Wow.
And I asked her why, and she said, because I should tell you also, I only give positive feedback, right? Which really helps to build up people's confidence level, which is essential when you're giving a presentation.
So I'm going to ask you more about that because it's wonderful. A really important topic, but please continue. Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you. So, but I said to her, I only want to give positive feedback, so I couldn't say, hey, don't do that. So I said, I just asked her, why did you read it? And she said, well, when I was a little girl, my mother taught me to memorize every single word, but I didn't have time to do that, so I wrote it all out. And I said, well, would you like to try then speaking out loud from memory? And she said, well, how on earth could I do that? I said, well, just write down your few 10 to 12 keywords and then use that to look at. And so at the end of the evening, after she's seen everyone else give positive feedback only, she had the confidence, she dared to do it. And she gave a fantastic presentation where she had much more even emotion. Of course, she made eye contact. She even stopped looking at her sheet after a few minutes. It was wonderful to watch. Now, that is a story from the book. But what happened since the book is also interesting, because she contacted me about 6 months ago and said, hey, Mark, I want to give a TED talk. And so she pitched for a TED talk, and she gave a TED talk, TEDx Venlo. It was a great TED talk. And I just thought, wow, that what you can achieve in one day is just
that
amazing.
That is some transformation. it's an incredible story. And you've now made me have to think about four different questions I could ask. But I want to particularly focus on this idea of positive feedback for now. And then I will come to some of the other areas.
Yeah,
because it's brilliant. I love the idea of positive feedback. I'm kind of doing it now, and it's not even intentional. but there would be some people who would question, is there such a thing as toxic positivity, and how do you avoid that?
So I'm not sure. Well, maybe I should explain first of all about the positive feedback. Yeah. So just to put it so your listeners know what we're talking about. So basically what it means is on my workshop, we only give positive feedback. So I tell everybody listening, okay, we're going to write our note, write our feedback down on post-its, but we're going to write down the good things. So the encouraging things, people, things that people do well. And everybody does, everyone gets into it. And people write things that don't even occur to me. It's great. And at the end of their presentation, people are like beaming. Wow, did that go well? Really? And they get then a little pad full of post-its, all full of positive feedback, which they can take home and draw encouragement from. Now, there are many reasons why this works. One reason is if you also give negative feedback, people easily become defensive, which you don't want. You want people to be open to learning. And because they are open to learning, when they tell other people what they do well, they said, oh, you did this well, they're also telling themselves what works really well. Mm-hmm. And because of that positive feedback, then you see people who are dare to try out things. As we talked about earlier, that woman who was prepared to speak without using notes because it was a positive feedback environment. So there's lots and lots of reasons why it works. Now you asked me about toxic positive feedback. I have never experienced that. So maybe you can explain what you mean or give me an example of that.
So maybe it's slightly outside of the workshop world. In the online world, on LinkedIn and on Facebook and places like that, there's a lot of motivational quotes, shall we say. So it's positivity, not necessarily positive feedback, but positivity.
Yes.
And it can be things like, today is a sunny day and you're going to wake up and have the best day of your life, or something along those lines. And often it's quite cliched, etc. Now, I don't have a particular stance on this, but I see a lot of people who react to that very negatively because they've woken up in a horrible mood, for example. They see someone say this is going to be the best day of your life. They think, you don't know what happened to me today. You don't know what happened to me yesterday. And actually, it creates something almost visceral inside of them that they repel against this positivity. Mm. Now, personally, I think you've explained the way that your positive feedback works extremely well. And I think this goes down a slightly different path. But that's what I mean by toxic positivity. Do you think there's... I have my own answer to this, but I'd rather get your answer first. Do you think there's a difference between what you're doing in terms of the positive feedback and toxic positivity, or do you think it just doesn't exist?
Yeah, so a few things to say. First of all, completely different. The positivity you're talking about is totally untargeted and therefore worthless, I think.
That's the key to me.
Yeah, indeed. So whereas the positive feedback we give is completely targeted, custom to the person who's just spoken. So it's a bespoke message for that person. That's one huge difference. Now, I imagine you could also have toxic positive feedback in a certain setting. If your kid decides to go and play with knives, and you go and say, hey, you're really good at playing with knives, that is not a smart move as a parent, right? So I wouldn't ever advise that. But I think it works particularly well in a presentation skills public speaking workshop because of the confidence that you need. You know, that I say to people, you know, 90% of a great presentation is how confident you feel. 9% is all the skills and things that you'll learn today. And 1% is all the details that you'll get if we also give you negative feedback. So let's forget all that. Let's go for 99 out of 100. And you know, that will already be a huge benefit to most people.
That makes a lot of sense. And I agree with you, by the way. I was hoping you were going to go down that road of the answer, and you did, because it was along a similar path. Some people might ask, you talk about negative feedback, and they might respond with, I don't give negative feedback, I give constructive criticism.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on what constructive criticism can actually mean and whether or not that's positive or that's negative or where that sits?
So indeed. So I also give constructive criticism, but I do that in a one-on-one setting when I'm, for example, giving coaching to people. And then it's about that last 1%, you know, because they've already maybe read my book, they've already maybe been on my workshop, but they say, hey, Mark, I've got to give this speech, it's got to go great, please help me. And then in a one-on-one, also give constructive criticism, which is, by the way, what I do in the workplace. I want to praise people in public, but if I have something I think they're not done well, then, and if there is a special case reason for it, I'll then do that in a one-on-one and say, listen, that may be, why did you do that? Maybe it could have done it differently in a different way, and try to bring it in a way that people don't feel threatened by, because that immediately closes all the doors to learning, but in a way that people will actually start to think about and say, actually, yeah, maybe Mark has a point. So I, even with constructive criticism, I try to bring it with questions to help people to think through what they've done. And also, then I don't have any judgment, because if I start asking questions, then people might say something I hadn't realized. So rather than go in and go, bam, 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 this was wrong, then I might actually learn something myself and I could stop before I criticize.
Yeah. So there's a few things that I take from that. It depends on your environment, as in group setting, individual setting, etc.
Yeah.
And it also partly depends on your outlook as the person giving feedback.
Yeah.
And whether or not you're willing to give feedback in such a way that actually you know that your feedback it potentially could be useful, but also you know that you have potentially something to learn. So that's why asking questions is a great way of giving that feedback.
Thank you. Exactly that. Yes, exactly that. Because you have to, indeed, if you go into a, it's like a kind of a conflict, but kind of, and you have to be able to learn, indeed, be prepared that maybe you're the one with the issue. Hardly ever, but you know,
you've never been the one with the issue, Mark. I know that.
especially not at home.
Never wrong.
Yeah.
So that was very educational, and you got to know where I'm going with this now. There was a new labour policy in the UK a few years ago, which had three E's, which were education.
Yeah, Tony Blair, right.
Tony Blair, indeed. But I know that you have a slightly different set of E's, and only one of them is education. So I feel like we may have explained some of them during our conversation today, but maybe using the terminology, can you give us a bit more detail?
Yes. So this is something I got straight from Remco Glasson, the three E's of how to make a great presentation. So normally when I'm on a workshop, I start by saying, so what makes a great presentation? Just shout out. And people give me different ideas, like, you know, someone who tells stories, someone who tells jokes, and so on. And I write all those three up on a flip over in three circles. So for example, where people say it has to have good content or a good message, then that's a circle which I say, and what E word is that? And people guess, and indeed it's education. That's the first one. You need to be able to have some content. So at the end, your audience learns something that they didn't know at the start. Then the other one, when people say things like telling jokes or telling personal stories or body language, I ask what E word that is, and then they guess usually it's entertainment, right? So people actually feel that they enjoy it. It's not, yeah, they actually want to keep hearing. And then the last one is the last E, where people say, well, it's good if I can do something with it, or if there's a what's in it for me. And that E word is empowerment. So you don't just receive information, you can actually do something with it. Now, what I say then is that for great presentation, you need to have all three. And then I prove it by saying, okay, let's say you only have education and empowerment. Let me ask you, Stefan, you only have education and empowerment, but there's no entertainment. What's that like to listen to?
No, sorry, entertainment. I'm just taking a while to get back to you on this one. I've forgotten what you said. Sorry. Hopefully yeah. That was a good explanation.
That is exactly right. It's boring. Okay. You switch off and stop listening. Exactly, Stefan. If there's no entertainment, it's boring. It's hard work. What about if it has education and it has entertainment? So it's fun and you learn something, but there's no empowerment. You can't do anything with it. What's that like?
I'd say that at the time, it's brilliant. Because yeah. you're being entertained and you're thinking, oh, there's lots here. But then you forget about it.
Yeah, indeed. One of my, I was at a local university recently. And when I asked the first question, when there's no entertainment, what's that like? And someone said, that's like all our lectures. And then, and then when I said, what's it like when you don't have any empowerment? He said, that's what it's like when I spend the whole evening watching YouTube videos. You know, there's some fun videos out there and you learn something, but you think at the end, what have I done with my evening? What a waste of time. Now, what about the hard one? What about then when there's entertainment? So it is fun and there's empowerment. You have a feeling I'm going to go do something, but there's no education. What's that like?
Oh, I'd say this isn't a game I play, but it's probably like playing Candy Crush.
Could be. Yeah.
I'm not sure what the empowerment is there, though.
Yeah, the empowerment is maybe developing your reflexes. But it's like someone who goes on stage and says, come on, guys, you can do it. And you think, great. Do what? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you need to have all three. Yeah.
That's a perfect explanation. It was entertaining.
I was thinking that as I said it. Yeah, we've ticked the three boxes. Right?
We have indeed. We're running a little bit low on time, but there's something really important, and you've mentioned his name a few times. So I want to find out a bit more. Tell me more about the man who, at least in the sense of when you got to the Netherlands and you had to start presenting from a work basis, Remco Klassen, I think. I'm not sure if I'm
pronouncing
that correctly. Tell me a little bit more about him and what difference has he made to your life?
Oh, wow. That's actually very interesting. So Remco Claassen, you can look at his name online, remcoclaassen.nl, two A's, two S's. It was interesting. He first did a 3.5-day workshop, which was based on the 7 habits, which I was totally blown away by because he kept our attention the whole time. And I was really left full of energy. And I thought, how did you do that? And then he did a workshop called Speaking with Impact, where he explained all these things. And so I learned loads and loads from him. Now, you said, what impact has he had on my life? Even more than that, also not mentioned in the book, because a few years after that, my wife and I, we went to one of his seminars, and he told my wife, hey, you're a natural presenter, which she is. She's naturally on stage. And then she got in contact. She actually went to one of his workshops as well and got in contact with a person who set up their own business, which she now works for, feedback training. So actually, what impact has he had on our lives? Big impact, very big, very positive impact. We're still in touch. In fact, we had a quick WhatsApp conversation over the weekend. So we have, from time to time, we're in contact. I gave him a copy of my book and dedicated part of it to him as well. So yeah, we have occasional contact. He's a very, very cool guy. Very nice guy.
I thought he definitely deserved a mention, because I know that when we talked in the past, away from the podcast, you've mentioned him, and obviously he's a big part of your book as well. Yeah. And so I thought he did all of the things that you talk about now. He educated, he entertained, he empowered you. Yes. and you've now gone on and you're kind of continuing to spread his word, in a sense, and taking your own
absolutely way. Absolutely. So indeed, so credit where it's due. And what differentiates us is simply language, because he gives his workshops primarily in Dutch. That's where he feels most comfortable giving jokes and things. I sometimes do workshops in Dutch fairly regularly, but most of the time I do them in English. And yeah, so we can help each other in that way sometimes as well. Yeah,
that's perfect. So, you know, I think you're a star.
Oh, thank you.
And we've talked a little bit about the word star. Yes. Before. Now, I'd like you to make this a star moment, if you can, and explain. Maybe that's too much pressure. Explain what a star moment is for our listeners.
Yes, a star moment. A star moment. A star moment is something in your presentation, which, if you include it, will take your presentation. If you follow all my tips, you'll get an 8 easily, or a 9 out of 10, maybe even 9.5. But if you want a 10 out of 10, which is my goal for everyone on my workshop, then you need to include a star moment. Now, you see, I've already built up mystery a bit. What's he talking about? A star moment is STAR, something they'll always remember. For example, we mentioned Bill Gates a while ago with his TEDx talk, where he released the mosquitoes. That was a fantastic star moment. And the thing is, I often give like templates to people on my workshop, like, for example, the 3 E's, or I have 3 I's for online presenting, or I do a template for a start, a template for a structure, and so on. And the latter one you can see on my TEDx talk as well. But so I have these things. But the thing is, with a star moment, it is by definition something creative. I can't give you a template and say, do this, it'll be a star moment. It won't work. You have to think creatively. And so I can give examples. A very easy one to do is a prop. You know, you show something physically that people will remember, or tell a story. Those are easy ones. I've seen people on a few occasions on my workshop take a sheet of paper where they've written something important and like rip it up in front of them and throw it away. Those are all really clever star moments. What amazes me on my workshop is on the final presentation, because everyone presents 6 times, on the final presentation, how many people include these powerful star moments, which comes from within themselves. I don't tell them how to do it, but by the end of the day, the positive feedback, everyone can do a star moment. And it blows my mind. So that's the answer to your question. Something they'll always remember.
What I love about these something they will always remember is, as you said, it comes from a point of creativity. And that might worry people, oh God, I'm not creative enough to do this. But as you say, throughout today, throughout a conversation, you're giving this positive feedback, which gives people ideas of how they can create this star moment. But what's great about it is it's always going to be unique. It's going to be unique to you, and it's going to be unique to a particular presentation as well. And part of what helps you to be able to create a star moment, as far as I'm concerned, is the fact that it is unique to you, because you're the only person who's ever going to be able to think of this. So if you, instead of looking outwards for something to do, look inwards to something you think, oh, nobody's ever going to have thought about that. That, to me, is often where the inspiration can come from to create something powerful. What are your thoughts on that? That's just my amateur opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you say amateur opinion, but this is Stefano Puck Creation. So you are a creative person. And to be honest, all of us are creative in some way or another. Everyone who's ever doodled or ever made up a tune or done something, everyone is. I kind of fear that as we grow up, some of that creativity is stifled, is prevented. You know, we're told to go for certain subjects which are at school, which are by definition not creative very often, but we are all creative to some extent. And my tip for anyone listening who wants to include a star moment is just go for it. And if it seems daunting, then start with something fairly easy, like showing something practical, or telling a quick example, a mini story, and then you can build from there. And there are many, many examples. I mean, the classic one, the classic star moment guy was Steve Jobs. And he just gave many, many fantastic star moments in his presentations. One example I give on my workshop is how he talks about his new laptop, and he said, it's so thin, it fits inside one of those manila envelopes we've all seen floating around the office. You know, a few years ago, the documents were going in an envelope. And he said, now I'm going to show it to you right now. And he walks over to a desk and he pulls out a manila envelope and he opens it up and takes the laptop out. And that's a fantastic star moment, because everyone then thinks, yes, it's a thin, lightweight thing. So I say, start easy, but just go for it. And use your own creativity. Use your creativity that you have within you. All of us have it.
I think again, you've given some people something else to empower them.
Very good.
Talking of empowerment, there's something else that I would like all of our listeners to do, and that is to find out more about you. Once this podcast episode is over, I want them to discover your book, I want them to discover your workshops, and I want them to discover the hair that you used to have when you did a TEDx talk.
The hair I used to have. Yeah.
You still got a good beard, though.
Yeah, that's right. The hair migrated from the top of my head to the bottom.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm having the same challenges right now.
In fact, when I was at this university yesterday, they used an old photo of me. So the first thing I had to go at when I was on stage was say, hey, listen, just to address the elephant in the room, it is me. My hair just fell 6 inches, but it is me.
Oh, brilliant. They shouldn't get confused now. They know that you used to have hair and now you don't. But if they want to find you and they want all of that information, where can they discover it?
Great. So the easiest place is markrobinsontraining.com, where they can see when my next workshop is. They can see a bit about it. There are lots of articles with free resources, links to my book, which is called Speak, Inspire, Empower, which is actually those three words I chose because they're all related to the goal of your presentation. We haven't talked about that, but that's all related to the goal. That's the easy way. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Mark Robinson Training. Just type that in. Send me a LinkedIn request. If you send me a nice message, I'll accept your invitation.
Oh, very kind. Very kind. So you're right. We haven't yet. What was your goal before you came on this podcast chat today?
My goal for this podcast was simply to make myself better known, in the hope that I'll be able to give more workshops to people, help more people to become confident in presenting. Because this is going now to my why. It's not only that this is a fun way to make a living. It's also because how amazing is it if I can help people to become more confident, because if they're more confident, then they are more authentically themselves. You know, if you're lacking confidence, you might pretend to be someone else, but if you're completely confident, then you just are yourself in whatever setting. What a gift that is. So that gift of confidence, of helping people to communicate their message in a way that other people want to hear it, and to increase their influence, you know, they've gone back to the three C's. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely perfect. And that's a great answer. Now, before I let you go, there is then that one more question. Why is it important to set a goal?
Oh, well, that's an easy question. If you don't set a goal, it doesn't matter what you do, right? if you don't got anything to aim for, then do anything. Now, having said that, setting a goal is not sufficient. You also need to set up systems or habits in your life to achieve that goal. So, for example, a very simple one, if you want to lose weight, which I do, then you need to make permanent changes in your lifestyle to do that. It's no good having a goal, because then you'll be unhappy until you reach that goal. And if you do reach the goal, then you might go back to your old habits. So you need to make permanent changes, permanent system changes. So if your goal is, I want to be able to speak in public, then the system should be, go where it's taught, where you can, to people you trust, read what you can, start learning and practice. That's how you'll learn, that's how you'll learn to speak in front of a group.
Makes a lot of sense. So goals are important, but actually systematic changes, yes. Even if it's to yourself, are at least as important, if not more so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, in reality, I have a billion more questions that I want to ask you, but that as we all know, and you're going to have to look this one up, listeners, you should kill your darlings.
Very good.
But I can't leave without asking, did you do a power pose today?
I didn't do a power pose today, which for your listeners is a way to increase your confidence. So there's two versions I know. One is when you imagine you just finished a race and you lift your hands above your head, and that's a great power pose. There's also what they call the Wonder Woman, where you put your hands on your hips. You hold either of those poses for a couple of minutes and you'll feel more confident. There's more about it in the book. It's and online. There's all sorts of things about power poses. I didn't do one today, but I did do one yesterday before I went on stage in front of those 100 people. And I felt confident. You know, if you told me 15 years ago, Mark, one day you'll stand in front of a few hundred people and feel totally confident, I would never have believed you. And now I do. It's what learning these techniques and applying them and practicing them can do.
Well, listeners, please make sure that you are currently doing a power pose as I finish this podcast episode. Mark, it has been a genuine pleasure. It has been educational. been entertaining. And now I'm going to empower everyone to go off and discover more about you. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Stefan. I loved it.
We will, as always, finish with a story. Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here? Why are you here? What do you want from us? We are merely making our way in the world. Every day we struggle to come up with just one more morsel, one more crumb of nectar to melt away the pain and the tears of years gone by. You laugh, don't you? You laugh when we laugh. You cry. I know you felt it. That anger, that bitter, powerful, revolutionary anger that rises up inside of you when we talk of injustice. Much awaits you, my friends. Much awaits you, but you must take it. You must use the education we have given you to make a story your own. To bring us along with you. Are you not entertained? Came the cry from everyone's favourite gladiator scene. You are entertained. You were entertained. Yet, dear listeners, you must know by now that your stories need more. Entertain, yes, but educate and empower to create deeper, longer lasting connection. These stories are yours. Look after them. You've just been listening to an episode of the Storytelling with Puck podcast. Your support keeps our podcast going, so please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen. Subscribe to keep up to date with the latest episodes, and never forget the importance of sharing your stories.